Namaskar, I am Krishna Mohan Mishra, and I welcome you to an enthralling session with Professor Alexander Dugin. As one of the most influential Russian thinker, Professor Dugin has dominated the intellectual world with his predicative vision in the field of geopolitics. As a philosopher, political scientist, and strategist, Professor Dugin's work challenges West-dominated narratives, advocating for a multipolar world and Eurasian integration. His ideas have resonated with policymakers, scholars, and intellectuals globally, sparking critical discussions on geopolitics, international relations, and cultural identity. Professor Dugin, welcome on Sputnik India and welcome to India.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So my first question will be on Akhand Bharat. You have written about Akhand Bharat. You envision a united Russia that is strong and unified. What are your views on Akhand Bharat? How it can affect the global political scenario for the betterment of undeveloped and developing countries?
So first of all, we need to say some words about multipolar vision. Multipolarity is philosophy. I have dedicated to Theory of Multipolar World one book that is manual for Russian institutions and academies, and then a recent book dedicated as well on multipolarity that is already remarks on realization of multipolar project in the institutional level as BRICS, as the change of the balance of power worldwide, so on the world scale. So to speak about multipolarity, in order to speak about multipolarity, we need to accentuate, to emphasize the most important aspect of it. So multipolar world vision is based on new actor in international relations, not on the national states, as was the case in the Westphalian system, but we should deal with state civilization or civilizational states. That is totally new actor, and that was already somehow described in the Huntington article, Clash of Civilizations, and civilization is new actor of international relations. But what is, in that sense, civilization as political actor on the level of international politics? That is civilization as not only as cultural entity, but as political body based on the community of the same culture. So a civilizational state is something totally new. We don't know it if we consider history, because multipolarity is something absolutely new. That is not just return to bipolarity or to Westphalian system or something that we know from the political modernity. Multipolarity is new world vision based on the presumption that the main actor for now on will be new subject, new entity, civilizational state. And what is civilizational state, for example, applying this concept for Russia? It is not just Russian Federation. It is the big space where a Russian political culture, Russian language, Russian statehood, Russian tradition existed during a long period of time. So that is unificational project, not already something that exists, but it is open project of regional integration. So we call it Russian world, Русский мир. That is precisely the term. Russian world, it is not Russian Federation or some territories that we would like to add, to join, to annex. It is not so. That is the open space where civilization is historically situated. And the closest correspondence to Russian world in the case of Russian civilizational state is the concept of Akhan Bharat. Akhan Bharat, that is Indian world. So we could call it Indian world, Indiyski mir, as we say Russian world, Ruski mir. So we could say Akhan Bharat as Indiyski mir, Indian world. So it is not just India as a national state. It is the big space of Indian civilization, including maybe Bangladesh, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, Nepal, and maybe influences of India to Indonesia, Malaysia, or Indochina. So that is civilizational domain, not just a political entity. And Akhan Bharat, it is not idea to expansion of Indian state. It is idea to revise Indian civilization from outer position to inner position. So that you should situate the subject, the axis, the thinking center inside of this civilization and not outside, because we are normally we consider ourselves with the Western eyes. We interpret Russian society, Indian society by the criteria of similarity or distance from the Western norms and dogmas and Western concepts. So if they are similar to Western, they are considered to be good and progressive. If they are different, so they say it is delayed, it is under the development, and so on. So the subject that serves to us to understand ourselves is situated outside of our civilization. If we start to change this regime and affirm that Russian world and Russian civilization should be measured by the Russian criteria, by Russian interest, by Russian traditional values, we receive something different. So I think the same, it is the main idea of Akhan Bharat. So we need to decolonize Indian mind, as Narendra Modi has invited us. You invited India precisely, but that is, we could repeat that. We need to decolonize Russian mind from the Western colonial attitude in the field of epistemology of science education. So we need to liberate Russian mind from the Western toxic content. The same for India. And Akhan Bharat could be based only on the Vedic roots of Indian civilization, of recognition of eternal truths embedded in the Vedic society, in the Vedic tradition, rituals, philosophy, metaphysics, branches of Brahmanic or Shramanic tradition. So that is inclusive understanding. And in this, Akhan Bharat could enter as well traditional for India, for Bharat, Islamic tendency, Buddhist tendency, or Jainist tendency, as well as some Christian tradition, not newly imposed by Protestant agents. That is not about religion, that is about politics. Not Salafi Islam that is supported by CIA and by Soros network, but clearly a normal Indian Islamic tradition, sometimes close to Indian spirituality in the Sufi, for example. There are so many very interesting Sufi tariqas in India. They are very close to Advaita Vedanta, but with different language, with different terms. But the spirit of India is always here. So Theravada Buddhism of Sri Lanka is natural path of this Indian Afghan Bharat, but Sri Lanka is independent. So it is not about political belongingness of all, or for example, of Nepal, Bhutan, or Bangladesh, or Pakistan. They could stay sovereign, but we should make a shift and to put the observer, the point of presence of observer, inside of India. So Indian subject. So that is Akhand Bharat. It is in the mind. So the greater India is not in the space, not in the nature or in the matter. It is inside of the brain. So that is decolonization of the brain that creates the map of spiritual India, of spiritual greater India first. And that is full rehabilitation of Vedic culture, Vedic principles, humiliated by colonial experience. So you were taught to despise your own tradition, to mock at your rituals and so, because to be modern, to be normal, it means to be like Western people. But we need to reverse such attitudes, to be normal in India, to have Indian clothes, to be Hindu, and to practice Hindutva, or one of the many possible ways to be inside of Dharma. So Buddhists as well, they deny almost everything, but they accept Dharma. Interesting. So and they call their religion Dharma as well, Dharma. So I think that Akhand Bharat is first of all spiritual map of Indian civilization with strong will to affirm its sovereignty, dignity, independence, and superiority vis-a-vis colonial set of values. So to be Hindu, it is more important than to be not Hindu. So you can be not Hindu. You could emigrate, you could live outside of India, you could abandon your tradition. It's absolutely free decision. But the pride to be Indian, to be Hindu, to follow Vedic paths should be main attitude of any Indian person who accept, who share this Akhand Bharat world vision. It is about world vision, not about territorial acquisitions.
So my second question is actually supplementary of this question. In recent years, Government of India has started an initiative, Freedom from the Mentality of Slavery, Ghulami Ki Mansikta Se Azadi. Under this, the ancient symbols of India are being given importance and they are being promoted. Emphasis was laid on the use of ancient name of the country, that is Bharat. Names of many cities were changed. Changes were made in the flags of the armed forces also. Indian Navy has got new flag. Indian Air Force has got new flag. What is the significance of these changes in your views?
So first of all, I think that the names, they are very, very important. So the names are not just arbitrary terms given for something that exists for sure. Mm-hmm. I rather agree with the concept of Nama Rupa, mm-hmm. Where the name and the form are intrinsically linked to each other. Mm-hmm. So you could not have Rupa without Nama, thing without name.
Yes.
They belong to each other. They intervene. So right name, it is the right thing should be called by right name. If you miss to call things by its right name, you corrupt it. So if your country is properly named as Bharat, that the nature of the country changes, because that is context of Nama Rupa. So there is Rupa of India, there is Nama. And Nama Rupa of India, when we call it by the Nama name, Bharat is one thing, India the other. It's India much more colonial. That is the name given to India mostly by colonizers. India never called itself India. Bharat, that is the correct name. So all this, all the symbols as well should be improved. So if you give correct names to the things, you improve the things themselves. It is not just arbitrary. So you can call it such in such way, another way. No, the things have their proper names. And if you call something correctly, you cure the essential nature of the thing. That is, I think, that is why it is so important to restore the real name of the things, of the rituals. And I think as well, the liberation is as well liberation from the wrong name and affirmation of the true names. So this this fight for the real symbols, real names, and that is fight for meaning. And because during colonial time, slavery was imposed not only in a political way, in an economical way on India, but in the mentality. So, you, including in the process of liberation, the part of Indian liberators, they accepted the path of the rehabilitation of the Vedic terminology, of Vedic names. And the other part started to imitate the West. Nationalism, socialism, democracy, liberalism. So that was the not full and true liberation from slavery. That was just partly liberation. So you gained political independence, you gained full control of your economy, but still you were enslaved by the Western chains of intellectual conceptions. They were introduced by colonizers. So that is important. So to win the slavery, the most important victory over slavery is precisely liberation from this colonization of mind. And that is the fight for names, for appreciations, evaluations of different things. So, for example, you could say, "Oh, just all tradition," but the same thing you could call otherwise. You could say, "Oh, that is glorious dharma, and follow dharma is the duty of any man and woman, child and the elder." The same phenomenon you could call with different attitude, and to liberate the India is precisely to destroy the rests of this slavery. Because if you imitate Western concept of liberalism, of nationalism, of socialism, all of them belong to the historical experience of different civilization. If you imitate them, you are in a trap, you are in a chain. You could not remark that. But if, for example, democracy, they say India is the biggest democracy, but to be proud of it is the same to be proud to still be slave. So you are biggest slave in the world. You are enslaved by the Western concept of liberal democracy. You are proud to be the slaves of liberalism. And I don't think it is Vedic. If you find in Veda something like that, you could for sure accept that. If you don't find anything, it will be better to abandon something imposed by a colonizer than to be proud to be still slaves. So the most important slavery is the slavery without chains. So if you still, when they say to you, "Oh, now you are free," and you still continue to serve, that is that they have won your heart. That is about heart. As instrument, for the time being, it is possible to use the weapons of the enemy, but that has some limits. And I think that's now India, after the almost 100 years of independence, should revise as well the instrument and the tools of this independence. So you have relied on some liberal, leftist, democratic concepts, but enough. Now India should make a step ahead and to say enough with this slavery. And I think that Narendra Modi is real spiritual renovator and the hero of India. Maybe he himself doesn't understand his own deep nature. Once he has made allusion on it, speaking about Paramatman. So I think he has a mission to liberate India from this mental slavery. And I think that is precisely importance of the change of the names, because it is the change of the meanings, and from that start the real revolution. And I think that Indian mind liberated to itself. It is liberated for liberation, because according to Indian tradition, moksha is the top of human aspirations, moksha. But that means concentration, spiritual liberation, and not material prosperity. That is just illusion, just maya, just very, very dense and very low layers of maya. There are the other, much more subtle, but in order to achieve the liberation, you should get out from all the layers of maya till you arrive at the point of samadhi. So I think you should not be ashamed about such concept. You should put that in the education, in the culture, and that is restoration. But democracy, it is just imitation of the Western pattern. That is a continuation post-colonial syndrome. So if you want to be free, you should be free to yourself.
One more question about India and China. India and China are two largest countries in the world with rapidly growing economies. For the last 4 years, India and China are face to face in Eastern Ladakh. On 21st October, recently, last month, just 1 month back, both countries have agreed to withdraw troops from two places in Eastern Ladakh. But there are still many places where both the armies are face to face. There is a long standing feeling of distrust towards China in India, whose roots are buried somewhere in the history. What is your views on these two huge countries and ancient civilizations? In which direction are their mutual relations going?
So it's difficult to predict, but the main thing it is to explore what we mean when we say border in multipolar world. Because when we say border in the national state world, it is clear, that's line. Line between one artificial creation, one land, colonial. In your case, colonial, yes, purely colonial, because India wasn't never separated Pakistan and Bangladesh or India. That was just the part of the same entity, historical entity, very diversified. So there could be many states or no states or mandala system. That is called mandala system. The mandala could overlap. The mandala could be a part between mandala could be huge spaces without any concrete control on one Raja or other Raja. So the mandala system, it is proper to India. So, for example, Pala dynasty and other dynasties, the borders were very, very transparent. So they didn't exist properly. So there was, for example, one village, one the same village could be considered to be loyal to three kingdoms at the same time. No importance. So they managed somehow to live autonomously because the border as line, it is a colonial Western concept of artificial delimitation of national states. So we could not say that Himalaya or the other territory or Tibet, or they could be linearly conceived. They are frontiers. They are spaces between two civilizations where the mutual influence on them is present, as Kashmir, for example, Jammu Kashmir. So there are Islamic tendency, there is Hindu tendency, there is Buddhist Tibetan civilization, and there is totally different Chinese civilization. But there are as well, or for example, Indochina. It is called Indochina, the frontier between India and China. Frontier and the balance of Shivaist and Buddhist tendency or the influence of Chinese Buddhism in Vietnam, for example, and Sri Lanka's Buddhism in Myanmar, in Laos, in Thailand, they were mixed, always mixed. Or in Indonesia, so Shivaist kingdom and Buddhist kingdom. There are frontiers, not lines. And I think the problem when you try to define strictly here ends India, here starts China, you always arrive to the war, for example, because Ukraine was the territory where Great Russian and Small Russian lived together. And there was mixture between them, so we could not make a line. And when one part started to claim that all this territory belonged to only one part of population, conflict started. So the same, more or less the same. So I think we need to revise the concept of border. So and to exchange, to replace the concept of border that create these tensions, to replace by concept of frontiers. Frontiers, they are spaces of mutual cooperation, friendship, and when one civilization almost in a very subtle way is transforming as a process in other, and we shouldn't cut them, we should make them a kind of bridges. So, for example, we Russians, we have around ourselves and inside ourselves the big spaces of Islamic world. But if we start to make linear borders between Islamic population and Christian population, we will destroy immediately Russia. So we need to be very, very careful concerning this issue. And I think that the problem between China and India should be solved on the basis of the mutual recognition of multipolarity, civilizational states, and you need the new form of dialogue with China based on the deep spiritual metaphysical principles and not only on superficial imposed by West concepts like border, because the border, it is not Aryan, not Indian concept. So, and not and either Chinese. It is totally the invention of the Western modernity. So let overcome them. Let transform the borders in something else. So some special regions, for example, of as a mandala system, overlapping loyalty, overlapping, that is not bad. Because if you accept that, the part of population is oriented in one way, the other in other way, And they are living, they could coexist peacefully. So just with some shades of difference, and that should be the process. One civilization is changing, is transforming another civilization. That is how this multipolar world should like. But that demands a huge amount of concentration, of thinking, of discussions, and not hostility. Because if you insist, oh, that belongs to me, oh, not, no, it belongs to me. That is a kind of divorce in the family. So it is the worst solution. So there are scandals, there are problems in families. But divorce, that is destruction of entity, of sacred entity. So if it is possible to avoid divorce, it should be done. Everything should be done. So maybe to give to other parts some new elements, new capacities in order to save marriage. So we need to be very careful constructing this commonality, the same with village, the same with any community. We need to be subtle, we need to be friendly, we need being different, we need to arrange our coexistence in special way. And interesting, so the leaders of independent fight in India, Mahatma Gandhi, Jinnah, they didn't want a partition of India. All Muslims and Hindu, they wanted to liberate from Anglo-Saxon colonization and not partition. That was the idea of the British men fleeing from India to make a kind of subversion of Indian greatness, and they have created two artificial states, and that was line. When we see line, border line, and when it is a result of colonial presence in Africa, for example, if we consider the borders there, the lines, that is not normally, that is not historically. Historically, there are frontiers. So we could not say that is one state and there begins the other. They begin, there is continuum between them. Continuum that you could not cut. You should respect somehow. You should say, oh, here majority is for sure Hindu. Here majority is for sure Islamic, but they could coexist. They could create and find a way to cooperate, maybe to make some rules, not to violate some limits here, not violate some limits here. And if you want, you could get deeper in your own heartlands, civilizational heartlands, but still, you could coexist. There are many people with double identity, so it is very important. Double identity is possible. You should not make a clear choice between two civilizations. You can choose both, for example, and that is in mixed marriage. It is possible, but it is not seen too good in the Vedic tradition, because normally, as Plato as well, was very Vedic, because he affirmed that philosopher should marry the woman philosopher, and warrior should marry warrior woman, and the peasant should marry peasant woman, and they will be happy together because they share the most important, the orientation of the goal, artha, kama, dharma, in your tradition, and very, very similar in the Republic of Plato. So he said that there are the guardians, they are warriors, and they are peasants, and they should marry between each other because they will be happy just for their own happiness, not as something imposed from the top. it is the nature. Nature demands some harmony, and I think. But sometimes there are situations when the person close to your type belong to different tradition. They are not very regular cases, but these cases, they could just emphasize the law, the general law, the dharma. So if there will be no the fault of dharma, there will be no correct dharma. So dharma is with some faults, it's embedded inside. Demonstrate its capacity to win the opposition, because it includes opposition. Dharma doesn't exclude them. So that is why I think that the problem of Indian Chinese border should be solved very, very carefully, and respecting this principle of civilizational identities of both civilizational state.
George Soros is a very famous name now. George Soros has been criticizing the BJP government since long time. He even labeled Prime Minister of India as non-democratic. What do you think explains his hostility towards India under Modi?
So I don't think that Soros is hostile to India. He, in my opinion, he is just the devil. He is incorporation of devil. For in your tradition, it is easy to imagine some asura becoming man and making the evil things for everybody. So your Puranas are full of such persons, or Ravana, for example, in Ramayana. So there are demons, and they could become men. So Soros, I think that is the name of demon. So he hates not India or Modi or Russia or Putin or Islam or Erdogan or Trump. He hates everything that is good, beautiful, strong, and traditional. He is a modern version of Kali Yuga. He is a manifestation of Kali Yuga and a demon Kali, who tries to destroy any kind of order, any sacredness, any kind of vertical organization, and promote everything that is toxic, that is morbid, that is unhealthy, that is perverted. So gender politics, feminism, he now in India, he started, and now he continues to foment the revolt of the elite against Indian state, because he sees in them the power capable to destabilize India, and instead to integrate Dalit, Chandala, in the Indian society, as Mahatma Gandhi suggested. Harijan, he called Dalit Harijan, so God's people. So there was the huge efforts of Indian society to include as well people who are considered to be of special caste and tribes, scheduled tribes and scheduled caste. But instead of that, Soros makes the propaganda of mobilization against India. He hates Modi. He is hostile to Modi because Modi is dharma. Modi is order. Modi is very crude. Modi is success of growing India. Because Modi wants to make India great again. To make India great again. He is Indian Trump or Indian Putin, because Putin wants to make Russia great again. And Soros hates any kind of greatness. He likes what is low, what is perverted, perturbed, and so that is as all demons do. So there is nothing special. He is just a demon. But why he makes some exception for Russian liberal opposition as Navalny? Why he makes difference for Democratic Party, for Biden who fights Trump? Why he makes exception of Rahul Gandhi of National Congress today? Because he hope that with this political power, the order and the traditions and the identities will be destroyed by themselves. It is not necessary to organize revolution if such tendencies receive power. They could make damage to their society by themselves. Not necessary to organize colored revolution if they could not succeed in taking power in the peaceful way, in democratic way, then start colored revolution. Because I have remarked in the last elections, clear signs of Soros participation in campaign against Modi.
So yes,
I don't want to blame Congress. Congress is traditional structure, social, political for India, but too much influenced and is more and more influenced by this liberal globalism, by Soros network. So its original core is, in my opinion, more or less healthy and sane, traditionally Indian. But now there is a kind of involution, a kind of perversion of this core. And when we remark that Soros supports some group, we immediately could be assured that that is we are dealing with something bad and evil. So he in some way Ravana or Kauravas in Gita or other evil asuras, there are plenty of them in Indian religion and tales. They are very important in order to make the difference between the light and the darkness, between the good and the evil. So if the evil is open, and Soros is open evil, and his open society, if he is in favor of democracy, that is bad democracy. That is not democracy at all. That is totalitarianism. Because the such concentration of evil could not accept something good. So he, as well as Bernard Levy or Macron or Yuval Harari or Klaus Schwab, if they support something, we should be very, very careful, because it is something toxic. So that is venom, that is poison. So I think that the evil is given to us, and Soros is given to us to mark everything he touches, he supports as something evil, and support everything he fights against. So if he is hostile to Modi, so Modi is our hero. If he is hostile to Bharat, Akhand Bharat is our main value. So the same with Putin. So if Soros support Ukrainian troops, you should support Russian immediately. Having no interest or love for Russian, just for the logic of dharma. If you are on the side of the devas, you should fight asuras. Above all, when asuras attack, if they are living in their due place, you could tolerate them. But if they penetrate in your realm, if they want to dethrone devas, you should stay neutral. You should react. So if you want to have sovereign, independent, and healthy India, you should destroy all kinds of network of Soros and like the people like him and his networks, in order you will lose your country, as we have lost Soviet Union, our empire, because the other Soroses were very active in doing the evil thing. So it is not personal name, it is not individual Soros, it's just the name of Asura, as Ravana.
You just talked about Ukrainian troops. Professor Dugin, Russian-Ukraine conflict will enter its third year in February 2025. Earlier this week, we saw reports that Biden has authorized Ukraine to attack Russia with American long-range missiles. How do you expect the conflict to unfold in the coming months? Will we see escalation or a push for peace talks?
So, Biden has done that in order to get rid of Trump. Because now he wants to provoke nuclear war, full-scale nuclear war, in order to not let to Trump to become president. Because if there is nuclear war, he could blame Trump to not to be on patriotic enough, and that will be the end. Or to put Trump at least in the awkward situation when he will come to the presidency, to the office inside of full-scale war with Russia. And he will be obliged to follow the same agenda as globalists started. So I think that was inner political decision more than international decision. It could provoke nuclear war and destruction of humanity because our country will be obliged to respond. So maybe we are very close to the end of Kali Yuga, and the evil path has succeeded in provoking destruction of humanity. No one could be sure that such thing will not happen. So if we have nuclear weapon, sometime there will be moment when it will be used as a strategical weapon, and that is logical, because if you gather more and more and more toxic elements, so you will be you will pay for that. So if you prefer materialism and technologies then rather than spiritual matter, so you will pay for that by extinction of your mechanical civilization. So nobody could say. Now the history is open. So peace could arrive only after our victory in Ukraine, after full liberation of all territory of Ukraine. That will be the condition for us to peace talk. Before that, nothing. So, but Trump could not understand that. Maybe he will not. He will have the wrong understanding of our motivations, interests in Ukraine, and our understanding of ontology of this conflict. But I think that we have the chance with Trump, and if we will be alive when Trump comes finally to White House, that will be great, that will be a miracle, because I think Biden he is the one of the finger of the same Asuric entity as Soros. So they are the same entity, the same infernal power that tries to destroy humanity. It is Kali Yuga, and Ukraine is for us Kurukshetra, where we fight against our global enemies. And Putin is hesitating Arjuna, who cannot decide or fight or not, because he sees there the people, friends and parents, Ukrainians are the same, our brethren. So he's very hesitating, Arjuna, but we know what is the end of Bhagavad Gita. That was fight, finally. And Krishna has said to Arjuna, Arjuna, don't hesitate, fight. It is your karma. And we appreciate your intentions and not results. The results belong to me. I am God and I will decide. And you should follow your path. So I think the same for Ukraine. It is our Kurukshetra, and Putin is Arjuna. He is heroic actor in our history and maybe in the world's history. But he will fight until the end.
Professor Dugin, at the recent BRICS summit in Russia, steps were taken towards creating a common platform independent of the West. Why do you think this platform is needed? What should be its plan and what should be its goals and what will be its benefits?
First of all, we are living in still in unipolar world in many aspects. We are living in the financial unipolarity with only one world reserve currency. So euro is not really alternative currency, it's the part of the dollar universe. And if we need to establish multipolar system, we need have multipolar financial system. So we need different way to deal in economy between each other, avoiding this imperialism of dollar. And that is logical solution. We need or to think about the mission of BRICS, of BRIC currency, or use some cryptocurrency, or organize mutual exchanges by national currency. It is easy now with the computers. It is easy to make a kind of online, on the fly conversion from one national currency to another because of the huge capacity of computers. So it is, before it was different because you should follow the balance, the ratings and so on. But now we don't need such complex procedures. It could be calculated very easily and on the global scale. So we can exchange national currencies very easy. So BRICS could propose new currency or invite to use cryptocurrency, some of them, or some family of cryptocurrencies, or just continue and promote the biocurrencies system. So we need just a suggestion from BRICS. It is not something totally new. We need to end imperialism of dollar. We need to dethrone dollar. We need to abandon dollar as the world reserve currency, or replace it, or imagine something different. But it is not too difficult, I think, because we have many solutions already that exist already. So I think that we need just agreement, and there is enough will in Putin, in Xi Jinping, in Modi, and I think that it is practical application of philosophy of multipolarity.
Professor Dugin, you spare time from your very busy schedule for such a long conversation. It was very enlightening to hear your views and especially your views on Indian philosophy. Thank you very much, Professor Dugin.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me to your beautiful country.
Thank you, sir.